at a level and give you a little more warning, too.
Okay. Sorry, Ethan, turned that one off at a minute early.
Okay.
We'll pick up an extra minute on the next one.
Roger.
Houston, recorder's going off.
Okay.
Hey, Gordon, I better make this note now. What Jack and Ron were talking about apparently was an elongated depression. I was talking about in the same area, and I've tried to mark it approximately on the chart. But it was a classic, small, bright, haloed crater. The classic, with the classic ejecta and everything, except it was this orange hued crater. It was not bright white, but it was very classic. And as I said earlier, not subtle at all.
Roger, Gene. Houston, I have a TEI for Rev 72 pad. No hurry. Maybe you want to wait till sunset.
Yeah, we'll wait till sunset, okay?
Okay.
Houston, 160 and 162, Mag, Oscar, Oscar, we're taking from the north, viewing the central peaks of Copernicus.
Okay, Ron.
It's a long ways away. I don't know if it'll show up or not, it might.
Houston, it's America.
Go ahead.
Okay, Gordo, I'm looking ahead. I've been trying to stay ahead and see what's happening today and tomorrow on the flight plan. And although this has come up in the past, we haven't said anything about it. Ron put his biomed harness on a couple hours ago, and he's going to end up wearing it a total of 6 hours. Then all of a sudden we make a changeover again and I put it on. And for a 12-hour period, and then we change again. And one of the problems up here is putting these things on, and you'd like not to leave them on too long, but once you get them on, you like to make use of them. And if the problem is time-consuming, I'd like you to consider down there letting Ron wear those until tomorrow morning, having me change over then. And when EVA time comes, we'll take special consideration to whatever requirements there are.
He just got a thumbs up on that from the surgeon.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, Houston, just took whatever the three were before 39 on Mag Yankee Yankee of Euler, Tobias Meyer, Terminator stuff.
Okay, Ron, and for Jack, the surgeon says he's getting occasional erratic trace from Jack's biomed. He'll be happy if Jack wants to take it clear off.
Gordy, I don't know how to tell you this, but I haven't had my biomed on for about 6 hours.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I haven't even had the sensors on.
Well, we must be copying the heartbeat of the America or something then.
How does it look? Maybe we ought to use it instead of mine.
America's ticker is doing fine. Along with everything else.
Okay, Houston, it's America. I've got a flight plan change for you if you're ready to copy.
Okay, ready to copy.
Okay, if you'll turn to page 3-26 at 2:17:52.
Okay, go ahead.
You can delete both those steps.
Okay, we got that.
Okay, if you'll turn to 2:30:40. You can cross out LMP and put CDR.
Okay, we got that.
Okay, if you'll turn to 2:30:29.
Okay.
You can change the first line, cross out LMP and put CDR. And on the second line, you can cross out CDR and put CMP.
Okay, I must be on the wrong page. Did you say 2:30:29? Must be 2:31:29. Okay, gotcha.
2:31:29. Cross out the LMP and put CDR in the first line. Cross out CDR and put CMP.
All right.
Okay, and we'll further update you as the mission progresses. I know you're pretty busy, and we'll hold any flight plan updates down to a minimum from here.
Okay.
Okay, Gordy, you want to give me a TEI pad?
There's nothing I'd rather do. You ready to copy?
Go ahead.
Okay, it's TEI for 72, SPS/GNN. 36477 plus 061 plus 083. Noun 33 is 230 42 5917. Noun 81 plus 28874 minus 03394 minus 00503 179er 095356. Rest of the pads NA, GDC Star Sirius and Rigel 136160 034. All ages 4 jets, 12 seconds. Remarks, assumes ascent refs man. Over.
Okay, DEI 72, SPS GNN 36477 plus 061 plus 083 230 42 5917 plus 28874 minus 03394 minus 00503 179 095 356. Sirius and Rigel 136160034. All ages 4 jets for 12 seconds. And it assumes an ascent rest mat. Over.
Okay, that's a good readback. So I have a little summary of how both the surface and the orbital scientific equipment's working. It's probably about 5 minutes worth. If there's some handy time, I'll be glad to read it to you.
Right now, Gordy, we'd love to hear it.
Okay, let me start with the America's gear there. The on the UV spectrometer, well, actually having to do with UV, back during Rev 38, they sent an Arrow B sounding rocket from White Sands up, and it carried a UV spectrometer above the atmosphere and successfully acquired solar UV calibration data. Farside Terminator shows there is a hydrogen atmosphere, but it is much less than had been predicted. The PI is very happy with the Mode 4 maneuver. On the IR scanning radiometer, it's still performing beautifully, and the PI is getting lots of high quality data, and I understand is ecstatic about it. On Rev 33, the crater Kepler-C showed up as a 132-degree Kelvin anomaly on a 94-degree Kelvin background after 11.6 days of lunar night. The crater Reiner was a similar anomaly on that revolution. In low orbit on Rev 9, Kepler-A showed a broad hotspot corresponding to its ejecta blanket with a sharp spike corresponding to the crater in the center. One cold spot anomaly seems to correspond to a cinder cone-like feature in Mare Orientale near the crater Hohmann. On the lunar sounder, telemetry monitoring of the sounder's average reflected power indicates that the Mare and Highlands exhibit markedly different reflectivity, both HF and VHF. The data is consistent with distinct layerings in the Mare, as would be expected, where the Mare flooded by successive layers of lava, although they say other explanations are possible. they don't see that layering indication in the highlands. Predicted topographic signatures over features such as craters and Mare ridges have been confirmed in principle. Of course, as you know, until they get the film back, they don't have, they can't really reach any definite conclusions. On the cameras, both cameras and the laser altimeter all appear to be performing very well. And everybody's especially happy with the solid laser altimeter performance. Okay, that kind of sums up Simbe. Do you have any questions that I could chase down? Or should I go on with the surface stuff?
No, why don't you press on?
Yeah, that sounds good, Gordo. Press on.
Okay, on the surface, the heat flow. These are little short summaries, each written by the PIs or COIs on each experiment. Mark reports the entire heat flow system is working perfectly. The probes have cooled down to a temperature of minus 16 degrees centigrade at a depth of 2.3 meters and are nearly at their final temperature. For comparison, at Headley Rill, we found a minus 20 degree centigrade at 1.5 meters depth. We had, to refresh your memory, was minus 16 at 2.3. Both probes show an increase of temperature with depth, and it is clear that we will get a valid heat flow measurement. The LEAM is functioning properly, responding to calibration, and the sensors show a low noise figure. The LEAM will be off until lunar afternoon and on with sensors covered until after sunset. Otto Berg asks that you accept his thanks and appreciation. On the LSG, the sensor beam cannot be nulled at this time, in spite of Jack's efforts. We are still studying the problem and hope to find a workaround. In any case, the instrument does function to some extent as a vertical seismometer and may be useful in a search for gravitational radiation from pulsars. The LSBE is fully operational. LEM ascent clearly recorded on all four geophones. And apparent seismic velocity measured across the geophone array was 110 meters per second. Regolith velocity was very close to that measured at the Apollo 16 site. The LEM impact was clearly recorded on the geophones. And the estimated distance was 10 kilometers away in the South Massif, actually very close to the targeted point. Although I guess you've discussed this, we didn't see it on the video. The first charge went off while you were on the backside last rev, and it's very apparent on the traces, which I'm monitoring right now. I think the next one's due sometime within the next 2 hours. Okay, the lunar mass spectrometer, the low voltage circuits of the LMS have been operated briefly. All monitors indicate the proper performance of the instrument, but application of high voltages will await lunar sunset when both the analyzer and the site have had time to outgas. Temperature of the radiator plate is slightly above nominal, but not so high as to be even important. That was from Dick Hodges. Okay, here's a little summary from Dave Strangway on the SEP. He starts off by saying, water, water everywhere, and plenty to be found because you didn't get behind the timeline. The SEP transmitter was confirmed to be working well at the correct power level using the lunar sounder. The receiver heated well above predictions during the whole mission, as I'm sure you're aware, but the two prime data legs were operated within the temperature limits of the recorder, and we have no reason to doubt that we got good data. There's also a good chance that the leg from station 4 to the LEM was within the temperature limits. Your procedures were performed excellently, and we look forward to processing the DSEA tape. Okay, now to let's see, we got the TGE, which is considered a spectacular success. The Earth Moon gravity transfer indicates a value of, won't read the number, milligals at the TARDIS Littrow base, but the value will be used to obtain a revised value for the lunar radius at this landing site. Gravity measurement made during the three EVA showed a large negative anomaly of about minus 38 milligals at the base of the South Massif, and a similar negative anomaly of about minus 30 at the base of the North Massif. Preliminary conclusions of the traverse gravimetry, the TGE measurements, indicate that the material under the valley floor of TARDIS Littrow is much denser than that of the North and South Massif. The gravity values will support the hypothesis that the valley subfloor consists of dense basaltic rock, perhaps as much as 3 or 4 kilometers in thickness. The extra measurement between stations 2 and 3 will be of great help in determining the nature of the boundaries of this basaltic layer and the buried extension of the massif. The cosmic ray detector, actually, you know as much as we do about the data returned from it, of course, but the we did recover it early in EVA 3, as you remember, and that was due to a minor increase in low-energy solar protons and heavier particles detected here. And the reduced exposure will not offset the scientific result. The neutron probe was exposed to the surface for 49 hours. PI estimates that the distance from the RTG to the probe is 40 meters, which will mean that the background count will be low, and he thanks you kindly for those few extra steps. And the last one was, to be summarized, was the field geology. And they asked for a very short summary, so Waldberger came through with 3 typewritten pages, so we're just going to skip the whole thing except the last line, which was to say that you guys did an outstanding job. Over.
Thank you, Gordy. We're just pleased that so many of things are working well, and happy that the PIs are satisfied. That was our objective, and we came up here to meet it, and those things that are done, I hope we met it well, and we've got a few more things to do yet.
Well, I can assure you, you're not the only ones who are pleased.
Gordy, well, you know, it's satisfying to have put that much time in and come out with some meaningful results. That makes us all feel good. Have you been able, or did you see that first charge on the on a video?
I forgot to mention that. No, we sure didn't see a thing. We had the camera aimed over there, but it was almost a kilometer away, and that was a 1-pound charge. And we played it back several times, but nobody saw a hint of anything.
Okay. You got a few more going off here in short order, don't you?
That's affirmative. I don't think we're up to the next one yet, but we'll keep you posted on whether we see anything or how they're doing.
I might also say that we appreciate the time and effort the PIs put in with their experiments and with us also.
Okay, I'll make sure that gets to the back room.
What they see over next to the sculptured hills on the gravimeter?
Well, let's see, Jack. It kind of... Let me turn back here. They actually included when they mentioned the negative anomaly of minus 30 milligals at the base of the North Massif, they said stations 6 and 8, parenthetically there. So evidently, they're including the whole area there as the negative anomaly. I'll try to get a more amplified answer to your question.
Yeah, well, could you see if you can verify with them that they were unable to, or there was no distinction between the measurements at the Sculptured Hills and the North Massif?
Yeah, I'll work on that.
Or better yet, what was the distinction between the Sculptured Hills and the subfloor area?
Okay. You may have to wait till next time around for your answer.
Oh, there's no hurry. You can wait till tomorrow or even a week if you want to. I just thinking about that problem.
Okay.
By the way, Gordy, you might tell Bob Walker, if he's around, that the cosmic ray, as far as I know, was untouched by human hands, at least on the moon, and it looked very, very clean when I put it in the put it back together.
Okay, Jack, we'll pass that along. America, Houston, one more question from the surgeon on this mysterious trace on the LMP's biomed. Do you have anything plugged in to the, is the biomed still plugged in and laying over on Jack's umbilical, or is there anything plugged in to Jack's that could explain the funny trace here? It's kind of a sporadic looking, looks like somebody with a heart in pretty bad shape. Over.
Gordy, my heart has always been in bad shape for other reasons than the one the surgeon's thinking about. It turns out that I am still plugged together. I just don't have the sensors on. I will remedy that situation so he doesn't have to worry anymore.
Okay, that solves the mystery. Thank you. Hey, America, about 30 seconds to LOS. See you next time.
Okay, Gordy, thank you very much. We'll see you coming around.
Yeah.
control at 214 hours, 36 minutes. And we've had loss of signal now with America on the 64th revolution of the moon. Be reacquiring in a little less than 45 minutes. And coming up at about 215 hours, 27 minutes, a little less than 1 hour from now, we're scheduled to have the second detonation of an explosive charge on the lunar surface as part of the lunar seismic profiling experiment. This charge will be a 1.5-pound charge located about 0.6 kilometers from the lunar roving vehicle. The summary of science information read up to the crew by Capcom Gordon Fullerton will be available in the news center. We hope to get copies of the information read up to the crew to the news center and reproduced and available. It will, of course, also be available on the transcript somewhat later. At 214 hours, 37 minutes, this is Apollo Control, Houston. This is Apollo Control at 214 hours, 56 minutes. In about 1 minute, we'll be commanding the television on the lunar roving vehicle on, and we'll have it positioned to look for this second explosive charge, which is going to be fired at about 215 hours, 27 minutes. This charge is part of the lunar seismic profiling experiment. It is a 1.5-pound charge of explosives, located about 0.6 kilometers southeast of the lunar roving vehicle. And we've got black and white TV now from the lunar surface, and we'll have that through the converter and up on the area where that charge is located. And the instrumentation communications engineer we'll be putting that camera in the proper position. We're about 27 minutes away from the predicted time of detonation. However, we are within the window during which the charge could explode. As we mentioned on the previous charge, this window is brought about by the fact that the timer is a mechanical timer. The firing charge is sent continuously during the window, and as the timer moves across the face of the firing pin, the firing charge going in, or the firing command going in continuously, fires the charge as the window moves across the pin. And we believe the television camera is now centered on the area where this charge is located. Hopefully the charge is right in the middle of the television screen. Thank you. We now have a clock configured here in the control center counting down to what our best estimate is for detonation of the seismic charge. And our T0 time is about 20 minutes away, 20 minutes 17 seconds to be exact. This is the clock that's designated H/O on the video monitors. This is Apollo Control. We're now about 1 minute 20 seconds away from reacquiring Apollo 17. It'll be on the 65th revolution. And we're looking through the Lunar Rover television camera at the spot on the moon where we believe the second of two seismic charges to be detonated is located. We do have a problem with the TV camera in that it appears to be heating up close to the acceptable limit, and it could become necessary to shut the camera down prior to the time that we have the detonation. This decision will be based in part on what sort of priorities the scientists have for other things they would like to view with the camera in relation to the detonation of this charge. And the instrumentation communications engineer, keeping a close eye on those temperature readings, reports that the temperature has apparently begun to stabilize and maybe even moved down a bit, so we may be out of the woods on that score. Have acquisition of signal. We should get a good stable lock on shortly, which will decrease the noise on the air-to-ground circuit.
You ready, Houston?
Houston, America.
Yeah, America, loud and clear.
Okay, Houston, America here. The mapper, when we took the image motion from off to on, and then the mapping camera switch from off to on also, I think. Maybe it was standby on. But anyhow, as soon as we went up to on, they had a barber pole on the talkback. Went back to standby, and just before AOS, or just about AOS there, at 2:15:20, then we got a gray on the talkback with the mapping camera switch in standby. Then we went back through the cycle, and it worked okay, so it's working now, and it's on. What I'm saying is it didn't start working until about 2-0.
Okay, Ron, we got that.
Must have been too cold, huh?
Well, look at it. Donald. America, would you select wide on the high gain and then narrow?
Doesn't seem to make any difference. I'll try a reacquisition again. And wide. I don't know, it doesn't seem to work very good.
Let's try REAC, Ron. You're in a skin reflection zone there, is probably the problem.
And we just had a call from our instrumentation communications engineer that he saw the charge blow down in the lower left corner of the television screen. And simultaneous with that, we're getting a very active response from the seismic experiment. The tracing pins are very, very active, almost going wild at this point. And the scientists in the back room here also confirm having seen the charge explode. We'll be re-rolling the tapes, rewinding the tape, and playing back a videotape of that detonation.
Jack, you loud and clear.
Okay, add to that little discussion of the pool bottom cone-shaped craters that I had, I think, last rev, that the one place there seems to be some variety in the freshest of those kinds of craters is in Mare Smithy, where the ejecta blanket of many of those kind of craters has some small dark halo craters on them, have small dark halo craters on them. Three or four or half a dozen per crater on occasion. But that seems to be something that I've only seen so far in the Maury Smithy region.
Roger.
They're superposed on the bright ray or ejecta blanket and our ejecta blanket system of the of those cone, the fresh cone craters.
Okay. America, Houston, I got some words for you to a request for a little visual observation at the landing site area having to do with orange material. If you're ready for about a 5-minute briefing, I'd like to give it to you now so you can get set up.
Okay, go ahead, Degra.
Okay, what we want to do is see if this is triggered off by your observation of orange material last rev, I guess, and possibly earlier. But the idea here is to look for some craters that we've identified on photographs that are in a similar geologic setting to Shorty Crater and see if we can see orange material around them. We're trying to determine if the orange material at Shorty is a one-time special occasion or whether possibly it's common to the area and just never been noticed before. And we think you'll be able to determine this visually better than any other way. So if you can get out the orbit charts, the orbit photographs, let's see, the lunar landmark maps for the CSM, and turn to the landing site number 204 picture. Let me know when you got that, and I'll show you where we think a likely point is to see craters that are similar setting to Shorty and to look for orange material.
Okay, Gordy, we'll do that. I've made a couple passes with the binoculars over the dark mantle around Littrow already and have seen nothing comparable with what's around Sulpicius. But let's have the examples and we'll make a special effort on it.
Okay, have you got the site photo number 204?
Here it is. Stand by, just one. Which one is that, 204?
No, number 2 of 4 of the site photos.
Oh, 2 of 4. Okay.
Okay, you can see the landing site there at down about 4 o'clock, and the 7-kilometer crater in the On the center line of the page, about a third of the way down from the top, the large bright crater there is Littro B is the name of it.
Got it.
And on the southern half of the ejecta blanket from that crater, there are several dark halo craters, which we think are in a similar structure as Shorty. We think that would be a likely spot to look for orange material. There's Faruka's circled about four or five that show up, say, at 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and 9 o'clock, out about from the center about a crater diameter, in other words, a crater radius beyond the lip, roughly. We suggest that you utilize the best window in your attitude, which you should be maneuvering to now if you if I haven't completely interrupted the flight plan, is in that attitude, window, let's see, one is the best, and four should point up that way also. We suggest you get somebody on the binoculars at one and use the same camera setup, with the exception of using the 250 millimeter lens if you can, that you're going to be setting up for as per the flight plan for the orbital science photos. If you could put the 250 on there, use KK as shown, and F8, 1/250th and infinity, I'll repeat that when you get to it, for the pictures, if you see anything. What we're looking for is orange material.
Okay, Gordy, we're working on that now, and we'll get KK up.
Okay, we were thinking you might be able to get the guy on the camera in window 4 and the binoculars in window 1.
This is Apollo Control. We're about ready to replay now the videotape showing that second seismic charge detonating. You'll see it down in the lower left corner of the screen. It'll appear as a bright flash with little or no dust visible.
I think maybe you're right about window 4, possibly being a photography window. I get oriented right. There you go. Yeah, it's all set right here. And, Gordy, I'm going to try to also shoot, if you'll let me, two pictures on the KK of that depression, colorful depression we saw near Sulpicius Gallus, if I can see it. Is that okay?
Okay, I'll give you a unilateral go on those two frames, and we suggest you use two or three frames on this area we've been talking about also, in addition to the schedule.
Okay.
28. If we get short of film or something, Farouk says the last part of this orbital science photos, after you get to the end of the run, change to 125th of a second, is kind of marginal for photography anyway.
Right. Whether we think we see orange or not, huh?
That's affirmative.
That's very strange. They have to pass you the camera in a hurry, Neil. I looked, you know, Gordy, the craters we're seeing around Sulpicius that orange are orangish, are very clearly orange. Orange is gray, and the whole, or at least most of the crater is that way. We looked at Shorty today, and Ron says that even the little bit of orange that he saw the other day is not visible, and I'd have to agree with that. The amount of orange we saw on the surface certainly would not be comparable to what we're seeing around Sulpicius Gallus.
Roger.
And in a couple quick scans on previous revs of the area, the dark mantle near Littrow, I did not notice any obvious orange-gray craters.
Okay. Just to make to be sure we're clear on this, we suggest that area to look for them only as a likely spot, but any evidence of craters with orange material in the whole dark mantle area around Littrow and the edge of Tranquility there is worth noting and getting a picture of if you see it.
I don't think there's anything there. Yeah, I got a view. Okay, 5.6 at a 250th. Either. I don't see anything comparable at all. You know, the ones that we've been seeing, the definite orange or the light tan stuff around are pure light ejecta blankets around them, not dark.
Houston, I guess none of us see anything comparable to what is down by Sulpicius.
Yeah,
no obvious color either.
Badge.
Well, they're comparable to Shorty, but they're not comparable to they're not comparable to the ones that we've been seeing. The obvious orange.
No, the craters are comparable to Shorty, as Ron points out, and but the color is not there.
Okay. We'd like to give you a couple of spacecraft chores. I'd like to terminate the charge on battery B and turn H2 tank 1 fans on.
Hand me the camera. H2 tank 1 fans going on, and I'll get that charge in just a second.
Okay, and just a reminder to go back to F4
at
a 250th. When you get ready for the orbital science photos, also the 80 millimeter lens, if you happen to have the 250 on there.
F8. We're getting a little closer to the terminator. Change to 5.6, Jay. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not.
See, we're looking down at zero phase.
That's right. It's almost zero phase. Okay.
Crew is taking pictures of the landing site at this time.
But I changed to F4.
How about you going to look at the nadir, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Are you sure we want the... Yeah, that's right. 8-second intervalometer for looking at the nadir with the 80 millimeter, right?
Yep.
Okay. Let me take a look down at the that Mari floor in Dawes. No, that's not Dawes. That's Bessel. Look like Dawes. Dawes has got a bunch of little depressions. They look like rimless pits in the bottom of it. Bessel doesn't have any of those. It looks like a bunch of debris. Yeah, on. I see yours, Gene. It's on up there a little further, isn't it? It's, but all of these are in the, this is not out on the Mare floor of Serenitatis. It's on the hills there, the Amos Mountains. It's just to the west of the Sapicius-Gallus Rill. And it's an elongate feature that runs kind of northwest by southeast. Yeah. No, it's not in the Mare floor at all. It's up there on the edge of the Amos Mountains. But that was the same type of material that it has the same color difference as the material around the Taquet rills back there. And I see all those bright orange craters right in the Sapicius-Gallus Rill up at the north end of it. Jack calls them an orangey gray. I call them an orangey tan. No. Jack, did you get the pictures? Good pictures? Because I could take it. See that one? Oh, yeah. See that one on the Mare? Yours is out of the, I got a picture of it.
Sure?
Yeah, I know. It's got a,
just inside, just in the foothills.
Yeah, just in the, wait a minute. Okay, I've got one out of the Mare itself. It's got a, strip.
And I can't take any longer.
Yeah, let me get the, I see one out there, I'll get it. Yeah, I better have, because they're getting close to, matter of fact, I need it just about right now. Okay.
El Gordo, we're going to get set up for Ron's orbital science, but that little classic crater, I could see it again with the...
Border 250?
With the naked eye, and I don't think it's the same one that Ron and Jack were talking about, but this is so classic. It's just out of the Mare into the foothills. To the right along our orbital track.
And we're starting with MAG 109 for the orbital science on Kilo Kilo. And I don't know what the number was before we started taking all of our.
Okay, we copy that 109 on KK.
Go ahead. it's Jack. My impression in that rimless V-shaped depression that had the striking talus on it, that it also, the there were, it was a spotted or mottled rim area that has the orangish tan, orangish gray color as the spots. And it looked as if the, this pass, and I'll try to verify it if we have another opportunity, it looked as if the more red-gray, red-brown-gray, if you will, material was lower in the section within the walls of the depression. This is a very steep wall depression, by the way. It has talus streaming down the sides of it, and the coloration streams in the same direction. It looks as if there may be layers or roughly horizontal zones that are have the coloration that we're seeing, which are forming the talus slopes down below them.
Break, window I changed to 2.8.
Okay, not till you get on up the line, Ron, and to Lambert.
Oh, okay. Lambert, okay.
And your pictures are pretty much right along the nadir.
Okay.
Lambert's right with the higher rills. There's one rill that goes right through it almost, and then another one. goes northeast, southwest. Oh, I see. Okay.
Guardy getting a good oblique view of Copernicus on this trip. And some of the dark halo craters that we mapped originally on the north portion of the ejected blanket, which are similar to Copernicus H, are very clearly darker halo than the, or have darker blankets around them than the ejected blanket from Copernicus.
Roger, and Ron should be due to change to 2.8 about now.
And this is a good view of the central peaks, although from some distance, and as Ron and I were discussing earlier, it's not at all clear that that, in fact that dike does not come true as a so-called dike, as a unit that is clearly defined.
Yeah, I, looking at the binocs the last time, and I couldn't really see anything that was really defined as coming on through there.
Okay.
There's still a very, there's a very clear distinction between the dark floor material of Copernicus and the hummocky floor material, the dark smooth being in the northwest quadrant.
You know, if Lambert is an impact crater, it's sure awful smooth ejecta around that thing. It only goes out about a half a crater diameter, maybe a crater at the crater diameter at some spots at the most. But it's not rough, it's blocky looking, you know, smooth, smooth undulating.
Ron, your next camera change is at Euler, which you changed to 125th of a second.
Yeah, I think we just crumped. Did.
Got a film?
Yep.
Hunt that other mag.
Go ahead and throw the Oscar in there, see if it'll work. Need a dark slide. Here. Okay, where's Oscar? BHBW. Good.
We got a good oblique view of the Hortensia Dome. And with their nice little central pit craters.
Did we hit the stick or something? Huh? Looks like we changed in attitude. Yeah, I'll be there to put Oscar on there, and I got one picture. And it's empty. Yeah. He's probably right. Those won't come out too good there anyhow. Too close to the Terminator for this kind of film.
Yeah, we agree with that, Ron. Farouk was mentioning that was kind of beyond Euler, was pretty marginal anyway.
Yeah.
That classic crater that I talked about last drive, I eye and then also looked at it again with the binocs. If Ron was talking about the same crater, and I have my doubts, he got a picture of it, he said. But the interior, I won't say there's a change to black, it's just dark. I'd say it's probably about the size, put it in the right perspective, of Shorty, or just a little bit bigger. The inside is dark. By that I don't mean it's black or anything inside, I just can't really see inside of it. But the it's a rust colored blanket comes out and overlaps on the rims, and then has the classic ejecta. And I'm going to take a shot at trying to get a picture of it next, Trevor, or sometime when we're in an attitude, because it's too good to miss.
Okay.
Not good.
And, Commander, if you can send one of your subordinates over there to terminate the battery charge, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, that's in work.
Okay, thank you.
Here's November. November, it may have three or four pictures left. It's on 160. Finish that one up. Houston, you ready for laser altimeter on?
Stand by. America, we're seeing some higher than normal temperatures on fuel cell 1. I'd like you to go to panel 226 and check the fuel cell 1 pump circuit breaker and also the switch on panel 5. Over.
Well, don't ask me how it happened, but your switch on panel 5 is off. Going to AC1.
Okay, I guess that's the best news we could have had on that. And we're ready for the laser altimeter.
Okay, hey, Gordy.
Whenever you get to attitude.
Gordy?
Whenever you get to attitude.
Here's one you can explain to me. When I turned that on, well, I guess that I got a sudden drop in H2 flow, and then it went up, overshot a little bit, and now it's steady. I suspect that's what your ECOM friend there will say should happen.
Yeah, that's right, and we see indications that the pump started up.
Okay, that's a good call. I can't, how long have you noticed that, Gordy? You know?
Oh, it's been about 3 minutes, Jack.
Okay, I guess I'm to blame then. I don't know how it happened. Hey, Houston, America, do we have any more orbital science photos?
Stand by.
I think that was it, but I'm not sure. Okay, Houston, the laser altimeter is on, and image motion is probable plus four.
Okay, thank you.
This is Apollo Control at 216 hours, 15 minutes. A few minutes ago, you heard Capcom Gordon Fullerton query the crew as to whether or not a switch might have been placed in the wrong position on one of the pumps circulating glycol coolant to fuel cell 1. And Jack Schmidt looked at the panel, confirmed that the switch was, in fact, in the off position, turned it back on, and everything was back to normal with no problem. By way of background, the ECOM, John Aaron, had noticed a slight increase in temperature on fuel cell 1 via the telemetry. After watching it for about 3 or 4 minutes, he asked Capcom to check with the crew to see if the switch controlling the glycol pump was in the off position. And as mentioned, Jack Schmidt confirmed that it was. This pump, as we say, circulates liquid glycol coolant through the fuel cells and cools it in much the same way that water flowing through radiators and around the engine of your automobile cools the automobile engine. The most likely explanation for the switch being in the wrong position that we have here, since it appeared to be a more or less transitory phenomenon, was that it was bumped by one of the crewmen moving about the cabin in zero-G. The fuel cell temperatures very quickly dropped back to normal once the pump was turned on again. We have about 18 minutes remaining in this pass before we lose radio contact with Apollo 17. We're showing an orbit at this time with a high point or apocynthian of 65.2 nautical miles and a low point or paracynthian of 62.2. Among the other statistics, the orbital weight of the CSM at this time is 36,477 pounds. And the orbital period, just a tad under 2 hours, 1 hour 59 minutes, 17 seconds.
Say, Ron, it's Houston. There's no more scheduled orbital science photos. We can't seem to run down Farouk to see if he has anything up his sleeve. There are a couple passes with black and white coming up, one next rev and then a couple just prior to TEI.
Okay, looks like what we've got left here, as far as I can tell anyhow, is just we've got all of magazine Papa Papa. And maybe four or five up on November.
Okay, and we'll come back to you if there's anything we got in mind to schedule on either of those.
Okay, we want to save some for after TEI too, shoot back at the moon.
Roger.
Hey, Gordy, that's TEI 1, not TEI 2. He's talking about.
Okay, I see what he said.
Roger. TEI, period.
That's right.
These guys can call it what they like, but I know what it's going to be. And when?
America, a little human interest stuff here. We just watched the second charge go off. Not just watch, it's been about a half hour ago or so. Second charge went off, and we caught it just in the lower left corner of the TV view. It looked like a, to me it looked like a flashbulb went off. Flashbulb laying on the ground went off, just a kind of a quick flash. No big shower of dirt or anything that I could tell.
How far away do you expect that one was, Gordy?
That one was 600 meters away. And it was a half pound charge.
Yeah, you're still pretty far away over that. Yeah, you're still pretty far away over that the terrain that those things are sitting in over there. You're going to probably see some when you look at those that placed by the end of the sub and back to the east there.
Roger.
America.
Go ahead.
Do you need the cryo stirred at all today?
Let me see here. Stand by. No? I guess you've been bouncing around there enough. We don't need to stir them.
It won't hurt them, will it?
No.
Okay.
Showing about 115 beats per minute on the CMP.
That call of 115 beats refers to Ron Evans' heart rate, the command module pilot exercising at this time.
America, we'll take Otto on the high game.
Okay, you've got Otto.
Okay, America, we're about to LOS, 40 seconds. Everything looks good as it always has. See you next time around.
See you, Gordy. Thanks for keeping an eye on us.
One last frantic reminder to configure the DSE per the flight plan after LOS.
Okay, we'll get it.
And we've had loss of signal with Apollo 17. On this, the 65th Revolution will be reacquiring as usual in about 45 minutes. And for the rest of the flight plan up to the cruise sleep period, which begins at about 220 hours, we have a relatively quiet time, very little scheduled in the flight plan, have an eat period. During the next revolution, crew will be operating the panoramic camera in the sim bay. They're scheduled to be in the midst of an exercise period at this time, and we could confirm from the biomedical data on Ron Evans, his heart rate, that he was indeed exercising. Prior to beginning the sleep period, the crew will be going through their film magazines, getting everything ready for an active day of picture taking tomorrow. There will be a lunar surface science briefing at 9:20 a.m. Saturday, December 16, in the main auditorium, Building 1 at MSC. Again, that time is 9:20 a.m. December 16. At 216 hours, 37 minutes, this is Apollo Control, Houston. This is Apollo Control at 217 hours, 18 minutes, and we'll be back in radio contact with Apollo 17 in about a minute. On this revolution, the major activities aboard the spacecraft will be the operation of scientific instruments. It's a relatively quiet period of time for the crew. The pan camera will be turned on briefly, just so we can get a look at the telemetry data on that camera. We won't be obtaining any photography with it. The mapping camera will be on for one full revolution, obtaining ground track coverage, supplemented by the laser altimeter data that provides an altitude reference in each photograph. Also, the infrared and ultraviolet spectrometers will be operating. And the crew will be taking a few handheld photographs out the spacecraft windows using the Hasselblad camera. We may have a bit of noisy communications toward the beginning of this pass. We've just gotten acquisition of signal. And we'll be receiving the spacecraft through one of the 85-foot dish antennas rather than the 210 antenna. We do have acquisition of signal now, and appear to have reasonably good signal strength.
Houston, America, looks like we're with you again.
Okay,
in fact,
America.
We know you are. We've been taking a picture just as we came up.
Roger. You're loud and clear.
Okay.
America, Houston, I have 3 one-liners for the flight plan.
Just the same flight plan we've been working on up here?
I think it is.
Okay,
okay, at 218.09er, delete mapping camera, retract. At 218.30, delete mapping camera, laser, altimeter cover, closed. And at 219.59, next page. In addition to IR and UV covers open, put in laser altimeter on.
Okay, at 219.59, laser altimeter on, and 218.30, delete mapping camera, laser altimeter open, and at 218.09, delete mapping camera, retract.
Okay, that that second one was deleting a cover closed, but I'm sure that's the one you got. Mapping camera, laser altimeter, cover closed. And that laser altimeter will just leave her run through the sleep period.
Okay.
That's it. Sorry.
High gain to auto.
Okay, you have it. And I took a picture of that one in Smithy is frame 160 on Mag November. And the reason I took the picture is really because on the western edge of the big basin, it looks like there's a small impact crater, but it's only been dished out in the more recent flat dark gray Mare material. And it looks like when it comes to the edge of the original basin ring, that part is not ejected out at all. So essentially you have a cone type depression with an impact crater. The material has only been excavated in the newer Mare material.
Okay, I understand that. Say again where that one is.
Well, that's the one above Rev 62, or directly north of the Wright Brothers, at the 12 o'clock position from the Wright Brothers.
Oh, okay.
You know, Houston, we're just passing over a little polygonal crater that's maybe 15 kilometers in diameter, 15, 20 kilometers in diameter. It's maybe 10 to 15. And down the basin of it is kind of a polygonal fill. And again, it has a dark greenish black rock that is collected down the bottom of it, and you also say it's streaking down the side of it. But I think one of the most significant features about the crater itself is that it has a swirl, and these are honest to goodness, they look like swirls rather than rays. It has a swirl pattern around there that it's radial from that most recent impact.
Roger, Ron. America, Houston, we haven't got data right at the moment because we're in a skin reflection zone. We'd like you to hold the pan camera to stand by until we call you.
Thank you. Okay. Subdued crater up there. Come down from Yerkes, and there's a little one about 10 kilometers in diameter, and then a big one that's about 50, and then there's a bright one. Okay, and then on... Yeah, and then right, and let's see, kind of northwest of that bright one, about a crater and a half diameter from it, is an orange-ringed crater again. Right next, just a bright one there, just about a crater diameter, crater and a half diameter from the bright one. See, it's an orange ring on it, isn't it? That's the one we were talking. I get it, yeah. No, that's right. It's not as classic, but it's another example of an orangeish tannish. Let's see, what? See that bright crater down there?
Yeah.
Just about a crater and a half diameter to the north of it. If it is 250, that ought to be good. And you said that was frame 162.
Okay,
yeah.
Ron.
Yeah, we do.
Just before that, I took of the ridge just on the southern edge of Tritium. The pattern of the massifs in that area were very impressive, but two frames just before that.
Okay.
Houston, one other question. I was looking around here in my film, and I got MAG Victor, which is VHBW for the Nikon. And looking through the flight plan, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to use that anytime. I just wonder if we might be able to use it for some of these Terminator photos.
We'll check on the film. We'd like you to go wide for 10 seconds and then back to narrow.
Okay. There's wide. Looks like that did it.
Okay, Ron, the high gain looks good, and on the film, it's your option on that magazine. There's no scheduled usage.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Okay, you want the pan camera power on now?
That's firm. We're ready now.
Okay, it's on.
Get it or I'll get it. Good.
Okay, America, we'll take pan camera power off now.
Okay, it's off.
Houston area is in the landing site where we now know there are extensive blocks of the subfloor material, particularly in the walls of the larger craters. I have the impression that those block fields from this altitude give a light bluish gray appearance.
Roger, Jack.
I don't know how far we can extrapolate that in other craters, but we might start trying a little bit.
Roger.
Following that a little bit farther, looking into Dawes, the lower talus slopes of Dawes have about the same hue and are overlaying first by a zone that's producing or several ledges that seem to be producing white talus, and then above that is the or make that very light gray talus, and above that is a tan gray talus slope that carries right up to the rim of Dawes. So there are three distinct major stratigraphic units showing up in the talus slope in Dawes that I can see.
Can you see any holes in the square holes in the floor of Dawes here?
Wait a minute right now. I was talking about the crater north east of Dawes. Let me check Dawes for the same sequence.
No, Dawes is the little one down here. That other one's the...
Okay, take it back again. That was Dawes I was talking about.
Yeah. Jenny, did you use the binocs? Yeah, I talked about Dawes already. No, those aren't holes down in there. Those are just great big... big blocks that have fallen off of the side of the mountain, side of the... Okay,
between the tan gray and the very light gray, there may be another thin and possibly inner... zone of a plain apparently gray unit forming in the talus slope. And a crater to the southeast of, southwest, excuse me, of Dawes. Large crater, I'll get the name in a minute. You see the lower bluish-gray unit, and the next white unit, or light gray unit, up, but the brown-gray unit is not nearly so evident at the top. In fact, I didn't really say I could recognize it there at all. I'll have to check that one, though, put a query by it.
Roger.
That's Bethel you're talking about. Yeah. Is that the Serenity?
No. The one back.
Plinius.
Plinius
is a rough looking one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was Plinius I was talking about.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, the oranges? Yeah.
And the next large, or well, it's not large, not as big as Dawes. It's a reasonable-sized crater that, to the west, the talus is largely just white debris on the slope of it. But it doesn't look like it penetrated nearly as deep as the other two we talked about. Goes through the crater, and the north wall is quite distinctly grayer to, let's say, bluish gray than the south wall, which is light, very light gray in the talus. My guess is that it's a very nearly vertical contact at that point.
Gotcha.
At least that's the way the talus suggested, but the talus does move vertically. All the color streaking in the talus on the walls, there, I'll say again that the more red-looking unit or talus is coming from below the orangish-gray material, but it is not a continuous horizon, at least not as so far as the talus indicates. It's local spots that are giving the reddish color.
Okay.
Very good.
Gordy, that particular depression doesn't look like it's a an impact-generated depression at all.
Roger.
We sure got to look and see if those things still look orange tomorrow. Because yesterday, Stony looked kind of orange then on the northeast rim of it, and it sure doesn't today. Sure.
220, yeah. They're going to learn the names of all those craters you guys named in here. Oh, yeah, I know quite a bunch of them. Hey, yeah, we better end there. Mike, decalled error is what I call it.
Yeah, Ron's decalled error. I'm just correlating apparent colors now and hues. And the lighter colored material there is comparable in hue to the subfloor color at the landing site.
Okay, first one's F-32 to 500. Bias Meyer. Yeah, window.
Window 5.
Window 5, okay. Gun is 55 now on Romeo, Houston. No, not until we come up to Tobias, just before Tobias Meyer. On the other side of Copernicus. Right after 218, okay.
Roger that, man. Ron, this is Houston. Do you want any help from me calling the f-stop changes on this P-66 run, or you want to do it on board there?
Why don't you give me a little help there? Just kind of reminders. So F-11 about Tobias Meyer, I guess, and then...
Okay, then F-8 and a 1/250th at Braille AD. Are you shooting pretty much straight down or out in front on this one?
Let's see. We're pretty much straight down on this one.
Okay, I've got a real-time plot of your longitude here, so I can call right on longitude.
Oh, okay. I started before Tobias Meyer. Very That's their Eratosthenes, okay.
Hold one, Jack. It's about time for F-11.
Go ahead.
Run.
Okay, F-11 at 500.
That's affirmative.
Oiler is, lower is blue-gray, and the upper is very light gray in the talon slope up to the rim.
Okay, it must be about time for F-8 and 1/250th.
F-8 is 2/250th, okay. That's my little C freighter chain down there. Like a cinder cone chain. But, between Tobias Meyer and Boiler.
Roger. Okay, try F-56 and 125th.
5-6 at 125th. Is this the last...
last setting, right. And you should finish up there at Tobias Mayer W.
Tobias Mayer W.
Okay.
They're a little beyond.
Roger.